Ken, why did you leave Vineyard Church after what? How many years you founded the church?
Yeah, I was part of. I was a national leader in Vineyard for 7 years and founded the church. It started in my living room. Essentially, Vineyard USA, the denomination I was part of, rejected Third Way and my move toward being fully inclusive with LGBT. And so that necessitated our starting a new church. So we've happily done that, and we have a couple of hundred people coming, and we're meeting at St. Clair's in the social hall, and it's really a great experience.
Was that a tough decision, perhaps more because it made you realize there were Christians within Vineyard who could not go along with your call to stop excluding?
You know, that breaking up is hard to do, let's just face it. And leaving a church that you've pastored from day one, and there's a lot of dear people, a lot of dear friends. I'm sure there's a lot of anguish and pain in the experience. You know, it was a tough delivery, but a beautiful baby.
And now you've got this baby. Emily, you're going to be marrying your fiancée, Rachel, in just the next few weeks. And I'm wondering, would you share with us, how did your religious calling as an evangelical Christian square with your realization that you were a gay woman?
Wow, how much time do we have? Denial is a powerful thing, and I would say that I probably couldn't say out loud that I was gay until I was about 30, although I never had any problem with gay inclusion in the church. I just knew that there were probably some powerful forces that were keeping me from being able to sort of admit it to myself. I knew what that would mean vocationally. We've seen some of the outcomes of what happened to that. And frankly, I grew up in a conservative family, and I wasn't sure what the pushback would be there, although I will say that my family has been absolutely amazing and completely accepting and embracing.
They surprised you?
They did. And in fact, if anything, I felt like I didn't give them enough credit. Mm. And that's probably my biggest regret, actually, looking back, is that I didn't give them enough credit. And so, yeah, it was a process for me to come out to myself. I wasn't one of those people that went through a process of feeling like I needed to pray the gay away, or I didn't have any problem. It was just like, okay, I'm gay, and now I've got this issue where I'm pastoring in a denomination where that is probably problematic.
Probably an understatement.
Probably was, yeah, yeah. Yeah, but I was pastoring under Ken at the time, and he was writing about the Third Way, and I think we were really hoping for inclusion. So I was actually choosing not to date for a period of time. And then at a certain point, I met Rachel, and that was it. I fell in love, and what are you going to do? Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure for both of you watching the news events leading up to what we know is an impending Supreme Court decision, you really have a personal and a spiritual interest in this high court ruling.
Yeah.
Right. This is happening all over the country. I mean, these kind of dramas are playing out all over the country. The evangelical pastors are meeting gay people and loving gay people, and they're knowing gay people for the first time. And it's quite a moment in history right now.
You've been referring to the Third Way, which we talked about when you were on the program talking about your book. And I know now you've produced a video to promote the Third Way. But recap, Ken Force, what is the Third Way and what it's based on?
Third Way is essentially saying that when you have an issue in the church where faithful people disagree about the interpretation of Scripture, in those cases, you always err on the side of full inclusion. There's such an emphasis in the gospel to fully accept one another because we've been accepted by Christ that we always err on the side of inclusion. This is rooted in the teaching of Paul, actually, in Romans chapter 14, when he talks about disputable matters.
What does he say?
He says, when you're dealing with a disputable matter, accept one another. Let God be the judge. Maintain your own convictions. If you have convictions, you're not encouraged to, you know, change because someone else thinks you're wrong. Keep to your convictions. Respect each other's conscience, but fully accept one another. So it's an err on the side of full inclusion message.
But we know, you know very well, because you've had to step away from Vineyard Church, that there are people of religion who feel that you don't get to pick and choose. That's choosing, I'll follow this and not follow that, but that there is a hard and fast law that's spelled out in the Bible that says this doesn't work. You can't do this, that this is, in some people's words, an abomination. I know you've heard these things. What do you say to them, Emily, when you're confronted with that, where people who say, well, we hate the sin, not the sinner, all of the things that you've heard?
I mean, I would just say that the Third Way is an opt-in approach. It's something where you have to choose to lay down your right to be right for the sake of the gospel. So that's something that we have to choose to do as part of a community. And so in our new community that we've started at Blue Ocean Faith Ann Arbor, we are following a third way. We're saying come with your own convictions, but we aren't going to exclude on any level.
And that to the people who say that's situational ethics, you say?
Well, I'd say that Christianity has never been about a new morality. Christianity is based on a relationship with Jesus. And the idea that we can have the correct moral decision on every particular issue, it doesn't square with reality. Life doesn't work like that. So the church has always dealt with disputable matters. I mean, whether killing in war is murder is something that faithful Christians disagree about, or when is remarriage after divorce legitimate? This is something the church has wrestled with in recent years in particular, and we find a way to stay together. We do what families do. We say that what we have in common is more important than what divides us. Families are always finding a way to love one another and to be able to meet at the Thanksgiving dinner table. And this is just something the church needs to do as well.
And you point out in the video that you have done for the Third Way, the church has gotten it wrong before. History has proven that.
Absolutely. I mean, we were wrong on interracial marriage. We were wrong on slavery. We were wrong on the full inclusion of women. For, 2,000 years, the church taught a very, very strict line on divorce and remarriage, where virtually no one who had a living spouse could be remarried. And this was just didn't square with reality. So much the focus of Jesus in his teaching was love your neighbor as yourself. This is the law and the prophets, meaning this is the Bible. Mm-hmm. This was the paradigmatic theme of Christian ethics, love your neighbor as yourself.
I'm talking with Ken Wilson and Emily Swan, who are co-pastors of a newly founded church called Blue Ocean Faith that openly welcomes everyone and is inclusive, and that includes most specifically LGBT members. I'm wondering for both of you what your thoughts are on that recent Pew survey that showed that the Christian segment of adults in the United States has dropped very sharply since 2007. It's down by 5 million adults and 8 percentage points, and it's hitting virtually all major Christian denominations and traditions. What are your thoughts about that, Emily?
I'd say it's not surprising. In other surveys that have been done, we see especially younger people, millennials, are concerned about hypocrisy in the church. They don't like that LGBT people are excluded. They don't like some of the stances that the church has taken in relation to our culture, and they're really turned off by it. But just because they're turned off by sort of the religious structure or framework of it doesn't mean that they're not spiritual. A lot of people still describe themselves as spiritual because I think we're spiritual beings, and they're looking for a place where they can come and bring their whole selves with all of their questions, all of their doubts, all of their trying to figure life out, and hopefully come to a place where they can experience this living God who is love. Those are the kind of people that we're actually looking to come to a church like ours. We're hoping to make space for them.
Yeah, people are looking for connection more than they're looking for answers. And a church which says, hey, we've got it right on everything and come with us and we'll teach you how to be right, that's not good news. That's, in fact, bad news. That's what every group is promulgating. But we need connection more than we need answers. But we do need connections. We need real connections with a living God. We need real connections with other people in a community. And so I think this is the human itch that churches need to learn how to scratch.
You say in the video, Ken, I thought this is a well-put statement that I wanted you to expound on. Gay people are not the impurity the churches and congregations need to get rid of. It's the judging and the stigmatizing.
Right, yes. Right. There's a human instinct to want to purify, meaning want to get out that which is foreign or other. And this is something that can be a very toxic part of religion. And so we have to be really careful what it is we're purifying ourselves of. And Jesus was so strong in his teaching about love your neighbor as yourself, so strong about judge not lest you be judged, that I think these are the things that we as Christians should be focusing on. These are the things that in our own community we need to be purifying ourselves of. Jesus, if you read the teaching of Jesus, you realize that my need to judge other people is really a big problem. It's not something I should be happy about or satisfied with or nurturing in myself.
What do you hope will happen from the video that the two of you have made? We'll start with that.
Gosh, what I would like to see are pastors who are feeling convictional about this issue. Like maybe their consciences are a little bit bothered by the exclusion of LGBT people, but they're feeling a little bit – fearful about what the cost of that would be, it's an encouragement to them to, like, you know, just follow your conviction. Be courageous. Stop excluding. Do a little bit of ecclesial disobedience. Mm. It's a little like civil disobedience, but just stop doing it and pay the cost. And because I think they would find that they're not alone.
Yep. So even if one has to step away from a church that he has been a part of for years and that he
helped
found.
Right. Well, to be a pastor, it's not a normal profession. I mean, the goal of being a pastor is to follow Jesus. And what you do as a pastor is you model what it means to follow Jesus. And so, you know, if you read the Gospels, there's a cost to following Jesus. This is not a, it's not a popularity or a success road necessarily. And so pastors of all people need to model that in their as they engage these kind of controversies. You know, just being fearful about making changes like this because there are financial consequences isn't good enough. People sometimes have to pay a price. In the early civil rights movement, I mean, a lot of people were afraid. Mm-hmm. And it was because there were courageous people who were willing to pay a little bit of a price. Sometimes
face the
it was
hoses,
a big price.
Face the police dogs.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
So why shouldn't pastors have to do the same thing?
And your hopes for your congregation, for Blue Ocean Faith, what would you like to see come from this seed you've planted, Emily?
Man, I would like to see people who have felt turned off by church or who have felt hurt or on the outsides or who are seeking a living God and they don't know where to go. I hope that they can come and find a safe community where they can be vulnerable, where they can bring all of themselves to it and where they can fit in and belong and just experience community and life.
And Ken, you've got kids, you've got grandkids. What's your hope for the kind of church community that your grandkids
might
know?
This is what I've always been interested in. I want a church that, number one, I would want to come to and that my kids would want to come to, and now my grandkids. And so, you know, the millennials need a place where they can really belong and where they don't have to exclude other people. You know, the thing that we noticed that was really a surprise to us is that when we lifted the stigmatization on LGBT people, people from other kind of minority groups that were even more hidden felt included and welcomed in a way, like people suffering from mental illness, bipolar disorder. We had someone share about having a chronic and very serious stuttering experience and how he felt more welcome in the church because LGBT people were being included. So this is like good news for everybody, not just for LGBT people.
The church website is a2blue.org, and that is the number 2, to find out more about the congregation in Ann Arbor, Blue Ocean Faith. And we've been talking with co-pastors Emily Swan and Ken Wilson. Pleasure to talk with you both, as always, and good luck with the wedding plans.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.